Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. On many sites, and hey, what's the worst that could happen? And we expect you'll have more to say about this, not that we can see it, but if you go to the forum, scroll down on the right, and under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and currently at least the first item on the poll discussion is 5 May 18, Twitter saved your naked passwords.
Well, what we could do, since we are in this dilemma, is we could also, well, either on my phone or whomever here, we could have folks email their questions to us.
Sure.
You know, if you want to email us a question, go to dave@jazz901.org and send them in that way, because I think we're going to be down for a good part of the show, unable to receive phone calls because, in fact, the phone system says major alarm.
Major alarm!
Will Rogers?
And his assistant, body parts.
As long as we don't get up to Colonel Alarm.
Yeah. Right. So just go ahead. If you got a question, you know, granted, we won't know if that solves your problem now, but we will do the best we can. Just email me at dave@jazz901.org, and we'll try to get your questions on that way. Just like I say, none of our systems, for the most part, getting out to the outer world is going to work.
Yep.
And it doesn't look like my streaming over cellular is working.
And, you know, that's one thing I found interesting, though, with Twitter there. They call it,
But the chat, the Soundbites YouTube chat is working.
Okay. They didn't call it, like Microsoft, a feature.
Right.
They found a feature that got it exploited.
Well, here's the thing. There's no such thing as a bug that saves passwords in plain text. It's not a bug. Some idiot probably wrote a routine that that's legit. I've done it myself. You write a routine that saves all sorts of information in a log so you can go back and see what worked and what didn't.
Yeah.
Right? But at some point, and that point should be before it goes live, at some point, you take away that log. You take away the writing to that log. Well, leaving it there not only says that the programmer who did that is an idiot, but that his manager is a moron and both of them should be fired.
They did say it was not in a database publicly accessible outside the company.
I don't care.
But,
right.
Yeah, you know, they thought it was. In fact,
very confident that it wasn't breached or anything got out.
One of the tweets from Jack Dorsey was, "We didn't have to tell anyone, but we did," which got a lot of criticism. And then we didn't legally have to tell anyone,
right?
But we felt we did anyway.
And just because they make that statement that, you know, oh, it shouldn't have been breached, don't assume that it is hasn't been.
Right.
So, you know, protect yourself and change it. It's no big deal, folks. Change it to another different, Dick was saying before. You shouldn't be using the same passwords on similar sites or more than one site.
Right.
They should all be. I know, you know, we hear it all the time. Oh, it's such a pain to remember all those passwords. Well, good. Fine. Use the same password if you don't mind having all your data and your personal information stolen.
Right. So, for example, if you've used the same password on Twitter that you used for your banking, that password is now out there.
Yes.
Somebody's seen it. Many people, yep, I'm sure, have seen it. And who knows who else has seen it?
There's a website that we've talked about in the past called Have I Been Pwned?
Right.
HAVEIVEPOWNED .com. Have I Been Pwned? You put in your email address, and it will tell you where that email address has been breached, at what services, LinkedIn, Facebook, Home Depot, you know, Adobe.
Right.
And if you used that password at you know, Home Depot, that you, the same that you did at Twitter, that the same that you did at Amazon, the bad guys know that password now, and so you must change it.
Right. And that's why we tell people, and I get it, it's pure laziness.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. But people are always saying, well, I'm not smart enough to remember multiple passwords. Yeah, actually you are. You're just too lazy to remember multiple
mm-hmm.
passwords. But you can remember multiple passwords. I'm ancient, and I remember lots and lots and lots of passwords without a problem. You can do it, too. And the thing that always amuses me, I do it myself. You get people, you're helping people set up a computer, and they get this, and they get that, and they get the other thing. You say, okay, now you got to put in a password. And they freeze.
Like a deer in headlights.
Like a deer in the headlights, because they can't think of a password.
Because
mm-hmm. they put too much emphasis on it. You know, and I tell people that it needs to be complex, but not complex like 349J212 left elbow J730. It needs to be uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and if you're really good, some sort of punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, happy 34 monkey, don't use that one. But that wasn't bad. Yep. Happy 34 monkey exclamation point. Much better.
Yeah.
And we hear that all the time in our shop when we're setting up a new computer for someone. Well, we need your password. Well, it doesn't ask me for one. That wasn't my question. We need your password. We need your Apple ID password. We need your Microsoft password. We need your Yahoo password. We need your Gmail password. We need your this password, that password, the other password. Because the new computer has to be set up with all those passwords. Well, it never asks me. Because you typed it into the computer, and the old computer's remembering it for you.
Mm-hmm.
If we're lucky, and the old computer still works,
yeah,
we often can get the passwords out of the old computer. So that's one tip. Don't wait until after the computer dies to get a new one.
Right.
Because after it dies, it's really tough.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people like to write down their passwords in a little book, which is great, but when you change the password, you got to remember to go back and change it in your little book, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of people who are leafing through book after book, you know, page after page after page in the book. Well, you know, here it was, then, and date when you make them, so that's nice. So try this one, try this one, try this one, try this one, because it keeps going again and again to each time. Each time they changed it, they didn't cross it off the last time, so we don't know which one is the current password.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, start at the back of the book. There's a way to do that.
Well, I had one person that grabbed a little notebook type of thing and put little tabs on it, and he labeled each site.
Yep.
With its own page. So if he went down, a few of them there, he was very religious about going in there, turn to that tab, and like every 6 months, his banking or something, he would change it.
Nice.
He'd change it there, write it down there, and then go over and type it on in.
Yeah. And you can buy a password book that's listed for passwords, but they're ridiculously expensive. Just get an address book.
Yeah,
and under A, put Apple. Under G, put Google. You know, under M, put Microsoft. Under
right.
Y, put Yahoo.
It's very yeah. easy to do. And interestingly, one of the things that I recommend to people is to use a password manager. If you use one like I use NPass,
mm-hmm.
I can look at it on pretty much every device but my Chromebook, and I haven't paid attention to whether or not there's a version for that now. But I can look at it on my phone, I can look at it on my tablet, I can look at it on my desktop, I can look at it on my laptops. And that means that as long as I keep, and of course you have to keep that up to date. Oh, what a pain in the neck that is. Okay.
Yeah.
Compare that to the pain in the neck of not knowing your passwords anymore. But if you keep that up to date, it's everywhere. So if my one and only computer died,
mm-hmm.
and I bought a new one and needed to be set up, I could find the passwords on my phone.
Yep.
Or my tablet, or, you know, my laptop, or whatever. So that's something else I recommend. Find a program like NPass, ENPASS, that lets you save your encrypted data in the cloud, and then access, mine saves it on Google Drive, and then access it from any device that can get to Google Drive.
We talk about it's PI, pre-internet encryption.
Right.
So you encrypt it on your computer, then you can store it online. So then when online gets breached, it's already encrypted and the bad guys can't get in.
Right. And so it encrypts based on your password.
Yep. Yep.
So you do have to remember one password, the password that opens MPass.
And that happens to be the name of a very popular password manager, 1Password.
Right. That's another one that's very good.
Yeah.
But you do have to remember that 1Password. And if you have that password, you can write that down, put it in your wallet or whatever.
Yeah.
But don't say what it's for. Just.
I wish Windows and Mac OS didn't save your login password by default.
Yep.
Because then when we ask people for it, they don't know. If you had to type it every time you logged in, then you would remember it. But when we tell people to do that, then they get mad that they have to type it every time.
Right.
Well, yeah, but now you remember it.
Well, I do that for my Chromebook. I don't. Mm-hmm. There's no auto login for me.
Well, especially now that a lot of computers have the fingerprint readers.
Right.
So you can log in easily with your fingerprint. But every now and then, it wants the passcode just to make sure it's really you and not someone with your fingerprint.
Or now what they're doing is they're using corpses to unlock their phones.
Yeah.
So if somebody dies in an accident,
mm-hmm,
or gets shot, for example,
before they get cold.
Before they yep, get too cold, anyway.
Yep. And even before that, there was something called, what they call it, police jacking, where the police would be watching a suspect and wait for them to make a phone call and unlock their phone.
Yeah.
Then you would jump them, grab the phone out of their hands before it locked again.
Right.
Because then you didn't have to. Because the law has held that you cannot compel someone to
however,
release a passcode, but a fingerprint they can.
Well, but if it's a face recognition unlock,
yep,
all I have to do is say, is this your phone?
Mm-hmm.
And it'll unlock.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's unlocked. I didn't force you to do that. I didn't make you do that. It just
yep,
happened to do that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Not that you care at this point. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco. Maybe you. We'll find out in just a couple of minutes. This is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and apparently we can now, once again, take your calls. The power seems to have come back on. I don't know if the streams are up yet, but Steve is... Audio is messed up, but the stream is working. So you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, and we can flush now.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about that. All right, in the meantime, I will read another news item. A new petition created by a beleaguered MacBook Pro owner calls on Apple to recall versions of the laptop that incorporate a butterfly mechanism keyboard, a design that some view as inherently flawed. Created by Matthew Taylor on Wednesday, the Change.org petition asks for Apple to voluntarily recall and repair all MacBook Pro models released since late 2016. Okay, Taylor is not simply asking for replacement keyboards, but instead an entirely new design, not prone to constant failures suffered by some owners. Since the 2016 MacBook Pro launched, a number of users have complained of failed, unreliable, and unresponsive keys, a critical flaw for a laptop boasting an integrated, hard-to-replace keyboard. Apple Insider brought attention to the issue earlier this week, offering hard data on failure rates gleaned from service information collected from Apple Genius Bars and authorized repair outlets. When comparing data from 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2017 MacBook Pros, not including the touch bar-related problems, the 2016 MacBook Pro keyboard fails twice as often as previous models. The 2017 version currently fares a little better, but a full data set for that model is unavailable, and it has only been on the market for 11 months. Aside from the frustration associated with an unreliable keyboard, cost of repair is a serious concern. Apple's MacBook Pro design so tightly integrates the components of the chassis with the chassis that if a switch fails and keyboards need to be replaced, the keyboard, battery, and upper metal case all need to be swapped together. We have seen out-of-warranty repair bills reach upward of $700 for this type of repair, all for a simple broken key. So far, the petition has amassed over 1,000 signatures. So do you own a MacBook Pro? How's it doing? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
What the biggest problem is that the key throw is so short. So the key doesn't press very far. And Apple did that to cut down on carpal tunnels. Like every new keyboard they've done, the throw is lower, so you don't stress your wrists out so much. But
if the throw is too slight, you get a jar,
right,
which is bad for you.
Because I'm still used to having to hit keys really hard. I learned on a manual typewriter.
So did I.
So people hear me typing on the phone and get mad at me sometimes. Well, if you got something else to do, no, ma'am, I'm just taking notes.
Yeah, right.
But so the throw is so small that that if anything gets under the keyboard, you know, dust, dirt, lint, crumbs. The key doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So one of the first troubleshooting steps is to take some compressed air and blow it under the key to try to blow out anything that stuck under there. Then we can try to take the key top off and clean under it. But it's the keyboard, top case, battery, trackpad is all one piece. So you have to take everything out of the old one to put into the new one. So it's at least a 2, sometimes a 3 hour repair. I did 3 of them this week, and I got another one in the office today. And so far, well, the ones last week were under warranty. The one I have now is 2 weeks out of warranty.
Hopefully that hurts.
Yeah, that hurts. Sometimes Apple has been known to make exceptions for that recently out of warranty.
Right.
It makes the keys and then the whole computer very thin. But a lot of professional writers really hate it. Andy Anatko on some of the podcasts of his I listen to, formerly of the Chicago Sun-Times. He's, yep. now he's a veteran journalist.
right.
He has been hypercritical of this keyboard since it came out in 2015 on the original 12-inch MacBook, that it doesn't feel right. You know, if you're a traditional typist, you cannot, you know, touch type on this keyboard very well.
Right.
It almost goes to the goal we see in science fiction, where there is no keyboard. Everyone just speaks to their computers.
Sure. And you can do that.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody this week about that, how you can do a couple people, how you can under Google Docs.
Yep.
If you go to Tools, there's voice typing. And it brings up a thing, and you can actually just speak, and it will record what you speak. It's not 100% accurate, but none of those things are.
And that's the problem. There's dictation built into the Mac too. But I would venture a guess it's more accurate than you are in typing.
Yes, exactly.
Unless you're
right.
A professional typist,
right,
or
right,
a professional
right.
writer that types for a living.
Right. I've written, like I've said, I've written 3 books on a Chromebook, and my hands get tired after a while.
Yep.
When I'm typing it, I have a Wave keyboard, a Microsoft Wave mm-hmm. keyboard at home. I can type on that for days.
That was nice because it had the right angle. See, that's the other problem with a straight keyboard the way we're used to. The angle between your wrist and your hand is angled.
Right.
And so that's one of the problems that causes the carpal tunnel is that your tendons going from your fingers up your arm are going through this little tiny hole, the carpal tunnel.
The carpal tunnel, exactly.
For your carpals and your metacarpals.
Right.
So on some of the more ergonomic keyboards, Apple used to have a really great one that had a variable angle that was really nice.
Oh, nice. I've seen it.
Yeah, if you hold your wrists straight to your arms, then the keys are angled. And so a lot of the ergonomic keyboards, that's one of the first thing they do is split the keyboard in half and angle it a little bit.
Yep.
So then your wrists are more straight. It does take a little bit of getting used to because you learned how to type the other way.
Right.
But if you just ignore the angle and just feel the keys.
Yep. It's amazing how nice that feels. It's not a cheap keyboard, but it's very nice. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is David from Rochester, New York. Hiya, David. What's up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to thank you and your associates for Tango website. It's wonderful.
Glad you like it.
The reason I'm calling today is I have a PC performance issue.
Yeah?
I have a laptop. It's running Windows 10. And my apps are slow. In other words, when I click on Google Chrome, it takes up to a minute and a half to come up without being connected to the internet. I'm using Malwarebytes, Avast, software, CCleaner, and Wise365 to try to get rid of some of the junk in there. But with Avast tells me I have performance issues with 26 applications running slow, and I'm just wondering if Security Tango has any software in there for that, or do you have recommendations? Somebody said I could use MSConfig.
Well, hold on.
That out, so
hold on.
That's where I am right now.
Or hold on. Let me ask you a question. When you say 26 programs, are they running simultaneously?
Well, they supposedly must be checking for internet connection or something. I don't know. Avast has a performance scan.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. First, do you know what processor you have and how fast it runs?
Sure. I have an Intel 575 processor, 64-bit operating system, 2 gigabyte RAM, and 2 gigahertz.
2 gigabytes. 2 gigabytes of RAM is one problem.
Yeah.
You need at least 8.
Well, I didn't have these problems like 2 or 3 months ago with the same, you know, hardware and everything.
Yeah.
But there have been updates to Windows since then.
Yeah.
And some of the updates have slowed down machines that Microsoft calls marginal. That is to say, don't have quite enough RAM, don't have quite enough speed.
And if there are these 26 programs running at the same time that Avast is finding, then 2 gigs is definitely not enough. But
okay.
Going to your first question, yes, in the Security Tango, it will find any malicious software that has gotten into your computer. So a lot of times, many of those old processes are malicious programs that are just eating up your processor cycles trying to do other things.
Did you also say Super Anti-Spyware?
Well, that,
no.
Yeah, that's part of the Security Tango's malware bytes and Super Anti Spyware will find a lot of these malicious programs that can slow your computer down.
Right, so I would run that as well. But also, you are running an Intel 575, which is a Celeron processor. It's not...
the fastest.
It's not slow. It's a 2 gigahertz processor. It's got a 667 front-side bus, but...
only 1 mega cache.
But it's only got a mega cache.
And 2 mega memory.
And that's the big one, two gig of memory. If you gigs. Could increase the amount of memory you have in that machine, because as time has gone on, when Microsoft updates Windows, they've been adding features, and those features take up memory. So it is likely that you are running up against that what's actually happening with your machine is swapping. If you pay attention, you may notice that your hard drive is running a lot.
That's another question. How much free hard drive space do you have? If you don't have enough free space, that can slow the computer down. As it runs out of RAM, it uses disk
manager, which takes 30 seconds for me to initiate it, okay, believe it or not, is telling me I'm like running 70-80% on memory.
Yeah, and some of that, you see, goes to something called a cache. The additional memory goes to a buffer, essentially. And what's happening with 2 gig is really the minimum for running Windows. And if you're running a 64-bit version of Windows, you really should be on 4 gig a minimum. But my suggestion would be to see if you can add memory to that machine. Kick it up to 4 gig or even 8 gig. And that should alleviate at least some of your problems. It certainly won't alleviate all of them, because again, the Celeron is not a terribly fast processor, and your disk drive itself may be slow. I have
how old is your computer?
Well, I purchased it used probably 4 years ago, and it was running XP.
Yeah, because this Celeron processor is 14 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's possible that your hard drive is beginning to fail, and
you're
getting
read
errors.
It's a wonder that that machine even runs Windows 10.
Yeah. So here's another issue. A lot of machines, particularly lower-cost laptops, used very slow hard drives. When you were running XP, that didn't matter. But I have a laptop that's got a very fast quad-core processor and 8 gig of RAM, and you think, man, this thing's going to fly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got an old 5400 RPM hard drive. It had an old 5400 RPM hard drive in it. It ran fine on Windows 7. It ran okay on Windows 8, and it just ran like a dog on Windows 10. I wiped out Windows 10 and put Linux on it. It still ran kind of slow, so I replaced the hard drive with an SSD card, and now it just speeds right along. But the point I'm making here is that particularly with older and less expensive laptops, they used slower, less expensive hard drives. And if you've only got 2 gig of RAM, it's spending a lot of time swapping out to the hard drive to make room for whatever program you're going to run next. And if that hard drive is slow, then that slows your whole system down.
And Dave, let me
I have one other point I'd just like to mention. I don't want to take too much of your time. You've heard of Avast security software?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you know, I've used it for years. I like it. It's caught a number of viruses, you know, on websites, whatever. So it works for me. Now, they offer, you know, their performance test is free, but you have to purchase their performance software to fix your performance issue.
No. Here,
but
Dave,
you're telling
Dave,
that would be a waste of my money.
That would be a waste of your money. Yes, it would.
All
right, you don't want to listen. You just want to talk.
Why are they selling these programs to fix my speed problems?
Dave, listen.
Yeah.
No matter what programs you try to buy to improve that performance, it's not going to happen. That machine is dated back to XP. It's a wonder that it's even running Windows 10. Now, let me ask you another question, which might help you and save you some money all the way around. Basically, what do you use that machine for?
I use it for email, and I do some scientific computing. But you know, that scientific computing part's not bad. It's just using the internet at all recently.
All right.
The last couple, 3 months has been just so slow.
All right. Yeah. Then what I would suggest, since I wouldn't put any more money into that machine. One, trying to do the memory and anything else is just going to be a waste of money. What I would look into is perhaps buying a Chromebook. Chromebooks you can get for $300 or less.
The real question is, what's the scientific software he's running? Will it run on a Chromebook?
Well, he's saying that he doesn't even run it that much. Most of his stuff is on the internet.
Well, but if he wants to run it at all, what scientific software are you running?
Well, you know, like R, the statistical package. And
yep. Yeah, you need an actual computer for R.
It runs on Windows 10.
Yep. Yeah, it will. But you need an actual computer for that. You can't run that on a Chromebook. So my suggestion is, if you cannot afford to buy a new laptop or desktop, and do you carry this thing around with you, or is it mostly just sitting at home?
Well, I take it to business meetings for presentations.
Okay. Then you definitely want a laptop. But I would suggest taking a look at another laptop. I'm sorry, but the machine you've got is very old and very slow, and if it's old enough, that hard drive may well be dying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I hope you're doing a lot of backup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm using the new file history.
No, and what are you backing up to?
A thumb drive.
Okay, as long as you've got good backups, you're all right. All right, we have to go. We got to take a break.
Thank you.
Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, 41 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 46 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And yes, we have back power, but it's done some interesting things.
Yeah, it just jumps from one break to the next right away.
Things will settle down. Things will settle down. We had no power earlier today. And but now the phones are working, the board is sort of working, things are kind of working. We may have people up on the stream. Is there anybody on the stream? It should say now.
Wait, it just came up.
It just came up. Yeah. So we're sort of semi-back-ish.
We got 18 people on the internet
18
stream.
People on the internet stream, on the YouTube stream.
And we did have a comment in the chat room that sometimes the callers have trouble hearing us when they're talking, and that may be why.
If you've got one of those half duplex kind of phones, you don't know somebody's talking back to you. That's absolutely true. All right, so we're back, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Walter did from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter, what's up?
Hello there. Good afternoon to all three of you. I'm the fellow that had the Thunderbird problem.
Oh, yeah. Frontier addresses on Thunderbird on Ubuntu 16.04.
Thanks to the gentleman who suggested to go to OAuth. Do that. Apparently, I had to go back in and reset the password.
Yeah.
So a lot of times with email systems, you need an application password separate from your email password, as a way of enhancing your security. So if someone gets your email password, they can't necessarily log into your email.
Yep. Well, I had said it before. I don't know what the heck happened, but apparently it got all goofed up, and so I had to redo it again, and therefore I'm back in business.
Great. Good. Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Now, annoyingly, the message should have been better.
Yes, the message should have been better. The problem, of course, is that authorization is good. It prevents spamming and et cetera. But one of the problems that we have is that authorization is hard to get it done right. And so the OAuth company, the Open Authorization Group, it's an open standard for access delegation, essentially. And it works, but it means you have to change slightly the way you do things. You may need a different password, et cetera. So yeah, it can be a little confusing to set up at first, but once you get it set up, you're good to go.
Yeah, I am good to go.
Good.
So I can ask, I'd like to ask one follow-up on one thing. I also mentioned that I was going to install Ubuntu 18.04 on a Windows 10 machine with UEFI.
Right.
I'm struggling mightily with it. I've been able to get Lubuntu on, but now it freezes. I mean, it will freeze at time at the login screen. Other times, I'll be in on the desktop, and it freezes. Would it be smart of me to consider going and doing it, changing the BIOS into the legacy boot and see what happens there?
It is probable that that might fix your problem with Ubuntu, but it may screw up Windows.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
So let me ask you this. When you installed it, did you have trouble installing it?
Yes. Well, I'm used to using XFCE, so I tried going with Xubuntu.
Yeah.
And right, even on the release notes, it says if you go on, there's the continue button will not work. And it's like, that's great. Well, I'll still try it. And true to its warning, with trying to install it, the continue button did not work. Ubuntu did go and install. I did have a bit of a problem at first, but it did install all the files. It went all the way. Then I went to reboot like it says, and then I ran into some problem, and then it's just continually become worse.
Okay, that's I honestly at this moment don't know what to tell you, because I did exactly that. I had Windows 10 and I dual booted Xubuntu, and it went perfectly. The problem I had was slightly different in that it wouldn't install at all until I stumbled across online a single line reference that said, and of course you have to make sure that you're plugged into USB 3.0. port.
Oh, Okay, I didn't see that, but I do have the USB 3.0.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not every port on some PCs is 3.0. Some of them are 2.0.
Right, and that was my problem. I had two 2.0s and one 3.0, and I wasn't plugged into the 3.0.
Sometimes you can tell that the USB 3 ports are blue and the USB 2 ports are black, but not always.
Right. But if it's freezing, does it freeze at any specific point?
As I say, it's been erratic. Some of it, it'll go in, I get to the login screen, frozen. Others, I get in, I go ahead, and I'll be onto the desktop to go ahead and, let's say, to update the software, freezes.
Is there any indication in the logs of what's going on?
No, I haven't looked at that. I'd have to admit to that.
Yeah,
have to get past that into. Hopefully, it doesn't won't freeze if I try to look into the logs there.
Right.
And if you can't hit continue, that's pretty rough.
That's a problem. I don't honestly know what to say at this point about that. I haven't seen that error, and I did a lot of research before I dual booted. And then that lasted until an update that killed Windows 10, and then I just wiped out Windows 10. But I did a lot of research, and I didn't see anything like that. And this is 1804 you're doing.
Yes. So at this moment, what I'm even thinking of is like, well, if I want to use this machine, I can always go ahead and use Nopix, which will run in RAM, which that's what it's meant to do.
Right.
And meanwhile, I can wait until 18.04.01 comes along, which is, what is it, another 6 months or so?
Right. Or you could go to 1604, which is also a long-term, an LTS, long-term, I forget what the S stands for.
Yeah.
Support, long-term support, thank you, version. And that's still got quite a while to go on its support. And you might find that, like I said, I did 1604, and it installed cleanly and easily. So I might say if you can install 1604 and then wait for the 0.1 to upgrade to 1804.
That I will follow up then. Thank you very much. I appreciate that opinion, that advice. Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Yeah, 1804 is brand new. The numbering scheme for Ubuntu is the year dot the month. So 18.04 just came out. I mean, it was at most, and it didn't come out the first, believe me, so it's less than a month old. And as with any new technology, stuff's going to happen that you're going to need to deal with. And that's why I'm sticking with 1604 until at least 1804.1. Is available before I do an upgrade myself, because 1604 has been out for a couple of years and it works great. You don't get some of the bleeding edge stuff, but that also means you don't have any of the bleeding problems that you might have with brand new. As Adam Osborne said, the pioneers are the guys with the arrows in their backs, and that's true when you're picking up a brand new thing, because Ubuntu is no different from Windows or Mac is very different, but Ubuntu is no different from Windows. There's a billion combinations of computer it can run on, and so you don't necessarily know that your machine is 100% compatible until it's been tried on it and it's working on it. And again, the 1604. Has a couple of years of updates and fixes and stuff. So,
Do you want it to run barely, or do you want it to run well?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you have a machine that isn't particularly generic, and let's be honest, dual booting Windows 10 is not generic. You might not want to go with the bleeding edge thing.
I had a terrible time the other day trying to get an HP. The Elite Desk to boot my Spinrite CD, and then I tried the flash drive. It was running Windows 10, so I went into the safe boot and boot a USB and ignored it, and then boot a CD. It ignored it, so I turned on legacy boot and turned off the whatever that secure boot stuff is. It ignored it. I couldn't get it to boot an external drive.
How weird is that?
I went into the BIOS and changed the boot order. It ignored it.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Stupid HP. No.
Okay.
So there are new security models being put into computers, the TPM, the Trusted Platform Module, and the UEFI boot to try to stop the malicious firmware that exploit that goes around every now and then. And so that means you also have trouble when you try to boot something that wasn't originally intended on that computer.
Right. And Microsoft did try with the UEFI to lock it to the Windows system.
Yeah.
And they were stopped from doing that, but they did their best. That's very nice of them. All right, to the phones. We got a few minutes left to talk to Gary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gary?
Well, I have a problem with a Windows backup. I'll give you just a little background and then tell you my question. It's I have a laptop, an Asus, that's X54C. It was a Windows 7 machine that I was able to download Windows 10 to, and it's run very well. And here's my question. I've been backing up to two separate Seagate hard drives, and occasionally I would get a screen that would say some files were skipped, and I could go in and look and see what they were. And my guess is they were locked, but they were pretty insignificant, so I didn't worry about them. But the last several times I've tried to do a backup, I've gotten the same screen that I've got up in front of me now that says, check your backup. A shadow copy could not be created. Please check quotation marks, VSS, end of quotes, and quotes, SPP, end of quotes, application event logs for more information. Then it says details. The writer experienced a non-transient error. If the backup process is retried, the error is likely to recur. And it has. I've tried several times. I just don't even know what VSS and SPP mean and where to go from here.
Right, right, right. Okay.
You're not alone. Okay. Other people are having the problem. See if anyone solved an answer. One of the things we've often seen is over time the backup can get funny.
Yeah, funny is a good word.
Try starting a backup on a new drive and see if you get the same error.
Okay, yes, I have two separate ones. And there's so little on this computer, that is, in terms of things that have to be backed up. I don't have a lot of data on it. And I might even be able to do it to a much smaller backup.
Right, right, right. Listen, we got to take a break, but if you want to stay on the line, we can come back and talk about this a little more.
That would be fine. I'll hang on. Do you think you can?
Yeah. Well, hang on. We got to take a break. Back in just a few minutes. We're done for the first hour, but we've got a whole other hour of this show coming up, so we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Gary from Rochester, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites, and we are the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Gary from Rochester on the line. Still there, Gary?
Yes.
You're a very patient human being. Thank you. There's we found a site that will show you how to fix the VSS and SPP error.
Okay.
And Steve's going to post that on our website.
All right.
It shouldn't be difficult. It seems to have started with Windows 7.
Uh-huh.
This fix should work.
So okay. Apparently the VSS and the SPP are volume shadow copy service.
Oh, okay.
But the letters don't work out.
No, they don't.
They're missing a C.
Right. Unless shadow copy is all one word. Volume shadow copy service.
Volume shadow copy service. Yeah, that'd be VSS.
Yeah. But give that a shot and see what happens.
All right. Very good. If it doesn't work, I'll call back next week.
All right. Also, make sure how much space you have left on your backup devices.
Okay. I do have a lot.
Okay.
One of them is 2 terabytes, so they're pretty huge.
Okay. Yep. All right. Not a problem then. All right. Good.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
I'll look for it.
Yep. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
One of our hard drive vendors recently discontinued their 1 terabyte hard drive. So 2 terabytes is the smallest drive we can buy.
Yeah.
12 terabytes is the largest single drive you can currently buy. It's amazing how big hard drives are getting, which also makes it even easier to lose that much more data. If you've got a 12-terabyte drive in your computer, you need at least a couple of 12-terabyte drives to back up onto. And suddenly that's pretty big.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Hi. I have trouble with my Windows 10 machine.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I don't have the control anymore. I have not been able to... let's see.
Hello?
Hello, yeah. I'm having a little senior moment here. I wanted to... maybe I better call you back.
All right.
I lost it.
Not a problem. Thanks, Jim.
It's amazing how you remember something exactly until you walk through that doorway and then it's gone.
And then it's gone. Or you're holding on the phone, you know exactly what you want to say, and then what's your question, and it's gone out of your head.
Yep.
I get that way more often than I should. Yeah, absolutely. Understood and not a problem. Call us back. That'll be fine.
Meanwhile, Dave is racing.
Meanwhile, Dave is racing to get the next call up, and
all the pent up calls that we're waiting until the phones came back online.
Right. For those of you who missed the first hour, we didn't have phones for a while. There was a power outage, and it got fixed sometime about 20 minutes in, and we've been catching up with people ever since. Our next caller is Tim from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tim?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for all the work you do.
Thank you.
I have an iPad that was bequeathed to me. I believe it's the original version of the iPad, the first iPad. And when I'm surfing YouTube, it'll play a video, and then if I pause, exit, and then come back in, the video won't play again. If I search it up again, I can play it again, but for some reason when I stop, it won't start playing again. I don't know why.
Well, don't stop. That's the first... one of the problems with the older iPads is that they're running older operating systems, because they can't run anything newer, which means the browser is old, and you may be running into an issue with an old browser on a new website.
Can the browser can Chrome be used on an iPad, or is that not possible?
It can be, but you need a newer OS.
I
don't know offhand what OS version Chrome for the iPad needs.
Okay, so the follow-up question is, I'm going to try and update the OS, which I think I tried and can't do it, and if I can't run Chrome... A couple weeks ago, I think you had mentioned that your shop will take old iPads and repurpose them. Is that true?
Yeah, we've got several charity organizations, the Autistic Center is one of them, that does a lot of good work with older devices that they don't have to have the biggest capabilities.
So this iPad, if I can't get it functioning, that would be a good choice for it. Is that true?
Yeah, yep.
Great, and just bring it to your shop. I know where it is. Is that
sure.
What it is?
Yep. Yeah, and it looks like Chrome for iOS requires version 10, and the original iPad can only go to 9.3.
Yeah, I think I tried this dance before and wound up stepping on my feet a bunch. So,
yep.
Great. So, thanks. So, if I can't get the function, I'll stop by your shop and drop it.
Perfect.
Yeah,
thanks.
Good. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Is that Apple isn't afraid of cutting off old machines, less so than Microsoft seems to be afraid of not cutting them off.
Right.
So you can run a new OS on too old a PC, and it runs too slow, and you're mad.
But it runs.
But it runs, yeah. So what Apple has done with a lot of their iOS and their macOS over the years is they will cut off old computers that would run too slow with that OS. And there have been ways people have figured out how to hack the firmware. So they report the hardware is newer than it is, so the OS does install on it, and then it runs really, really slow. And same thing.
And then people get mad.
And people get mad, yeah. And so that's sort of what happened. The original iPad has an older processor. It's probably only a 32-bit processor. And that's usually the big reason that that the new software won't run on it, is it needs to be 64-bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, the old programs still work. And in fact, there was a purge in the App Store. Oh, I forget when it was, sometime last year, where they removed a bunch of apps that hadn't been updated in forever.
Right,
so
right, right.
Somebody put up a small app and then abandoned it for, you know, 5 years. But some people still are running old iPads and want those old programs.
Right.
So if they're still on your iPad, they'll still keep working, but you can't download them again anymore.
Right.
Which is
frustrating. I was talking to somebody who's got hundreds of apps that are old 32-bit things, and he says, I don't care. Whatever. You know, it's not. I'm not making money off them anymore. I don't update them anymore.
Yep.
If they go away, I don't really care. But yeah, and that's we see that with every operating system. That's why lots of people are looking at running Ubuntu on or any some form of Linux on older laptops or desktops. That's why Cloud Ready, the Neverware people have made Cloud Ready, which essentially turns an old computer essentially into a Chromebook, and you don't need a particularly fast or amazing device to do that with. So people are finding uses for those things. They're finding uses for old phones. I've taken one of my old phones and turned it into essentially an iPod. I call it my iPod because it's Android, right? Yep.
I'm surprised Apple's copyright police haven't jumped on you.
yeah, me personally, right. It works. I was just going to ask you that very question.
So apparently there are ways to run a different OS, run Android on an iPad, because it's, well, the iPads use an Apple-designed processor, but it's based on ARM.
Right.
So if you have an OS that runs on ARM, it might work. I'm Googling around, and apparently there is a way to force Android onto an iPad.
Which turns it now into an Android tablet, which is certainly acceptable. You don't get, I guess the only thing you really don't get is iTunes.
And the Mac App Store, which you don't need because now you have the Android App Store.
Right. It seems that would certainly work. And I was talking to somebody the other day who wanted to install Ubuntu on his machine, but he has lots and lots of songs in his iTunes library. My suggestion was to download them from the iTunes library, and then he can use there's a dozen things on Ubuntu that will do essentially the same thing. Manage your library.
Yep.
You can't buy from the iTunes store, but if you already own the music, you can manage it.
Yep.
On Ubuntu.
The Android on an iPhone, they're calling iDroid.
The iDroid. Very nice.
I don't know if I should post it. If you're really interested, you can find it yourself, because it's a dangerous thing to do. So
yeah,
maybe
it's not something we sanction. It's certainly not something we can or will help you with. First, it'll entirely void your warranty. It probably is illegal on several levels.
And if you do it wrong, your device is dead forever.
Right. You can brick your device really, really easily, and we will not help you do that. Same reason that I'm very reluctant to tell people how to do things in the registry. One slip, and you're essentially done.
Yep.
Okay. I've actually got an old iPad sitting around that I can't upgrade, can't do much with.
Yeah, and I misspoke. The original iPad can only go to iOS 5, and we're currently on 11.
Yeah, right.
It's funny. The original iPad is from 2010. That doesn't sound like that long ago.
Right.
But in computer terms, that's a really long time ago.
That's a very long time. And it's frustrating to people.
Yep.
Particularly when you spent as much money as you did mm-hmm. On an iPad, particularly back in the day with the first model. That's a lot of money, and you would like it to last more than 5 years. But things don't.
Some people will work out cost per year. So the original iPad was $500. If it lasted 5 years, that's $100 a year. That's not bad. But $100 a year sounds like a lot, but less than $10 a month, that doesn't sound like much.
Right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, guys. Well, two things. One thing, I want to be the bad guy so you guys don't have to.
Yeah.
I know you're having issues with the phone today, but this happens all the time. People, when you call in, be brief. Don't go into a lot of explanation. The guys will ask you questions as you go along and let them speak, because I'm sure it's annoying for them and it's annoying for us as listeners.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody did point out, though, that if you've got one of those phones that really essentially does half duplex, you can't hear somebody else when you're speaking.
Right. So, but I hear it all the time, and you know, and I feel for you guys. It's very difficult to be able to ask somebody a question when they won't stop talking.
Right, right, right. It's very hard.
So I wanted to be the bad guy there.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Second of all, I wanted to tell you I got the April 2018 Windows 10 update.
Yeah.
And it specifically said in it was going to take a long time to download and install. And on my SSD machine, it was done in 45 minutes.
Yep.
For some people, that's a really long time.
Well, it also helped that I now have 100 megabit internet, so...
I was about to say, it also depends on the speed of your internet, and it depends on the speed of your processor and how much free space you have in your hard drive and about a million other things.
Second thing is it also came up on my 2012 Gateway tower, and that only took about an hour and 15, and that's got a regular hard drive in it, you know,
right?
7200 RPM. But anyways, it wasn't too bad. It did fail the first time, but I did it again. It must have been a bad download.
And yeah, that happens.
And it was fine.
Perfect. Good to know.
And that's an old machine.
And, yeah. 2012. That's an old machine.
It's got 8 gig of RAM, so that helps. It does have a decent 4-core processor, 2.4 gigahertz. I can't remember what i5 it is, but it's decent. So it came through. I'm not that impressed with the update. It's okay, you know. One thing I don't like about Windows 10 is they dummied down the settings and everything, and it's kind of simple.
Yeah.
But thanks for letting me talk.
Yep. All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Well, it's happened. The battery is dying in my Chromebook.
Uh-oh.
It's a 4-year-old Chromebook. It owes me nothing. I just have to carry the power cord around now, which I haven't been doing because it had 10 hours of battery. But now it has about an hour of battery. and it's not easily replaceable. I suspect it is replaceable, but not easily.
No, it's just justification for the new one.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. Don't laugh.
No, hey, you've been talking about this for a while, and in support of your trying to, you know, justify it.
Yeah.
You have been saying, well, there's nothing wrong with it yet. I can't see, you know, going ahead and putting something aside that's working fine. And it has been for a while. But like everything else, it's an electronic device. It's wearing out. It's not going to hold a charge. And you need to be
I need to be working.
Having it with the show.
Right.
Yeah.
I can, I'll go around a little while longer with the battery, with the power cord, but yeah, I'll be looking for a new Chromebook shortly. All right, the embattled political consulting firm Cambridge Analytica announced on Wednesday that it would cease most operations and file for bankruptcy amid growing legal political scrutiny of its business practices and work for Donald J. Trump's presidential campaign. The decision was made. Actually, they're not going away. They're just changing their name. It's something that starts with an E, and I can't remember what it was now. Oh, well. The decision was made less than 2 months after Cambridge Analytica and Facebook became embroiled in a data harvesting scandal that compromised the personal information of up to 87 million people. Revelations about the misuse of data published in March by the New York Times and the Observer of London plunged Facebook into crisis and prompted... Facebook isn't in crisis. They just don't care. They don't care what you think. You're going to keep using Facebook because you're not bright enough to stop. And prompted regulators and lawmakers to open investigations into Cambridge Analytica. In a statement posted to its website, Cambridge Analytica said the controversy has driven away virtually all of the company's customers. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. Forcing it to file for bankruptcy in both the United States and Britain. The elections division of Cambridge's British affiliate, SCL Group, will also shut down, the company said. But the company's announcements left several questions unanswered, including who would retain the company's intellectual property, the so-called psychographic voter profiles built in part with data from Facebook, and whether Cambridge Analytica's data mining business would return under new auspices. And they will. I forget what it's going to be called.
Emerdata.
Thank you. I knew it started with an E, and I couldn't remember it. And so Cambridge Analytica will be no more, but Emerdata has risen from the ashes. And is continuing on. And why are you still using Facebook? For pity's sake. Anyway, do you still trust social media? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Paul did from Canandaigua, New York. Hi, Paul. What's up?
Paul? Thing happened. I save a fair number of web pages. And from this one site, when I... open the files that I've downloaded that make the page and run them. I can see the it's an auction. I can see the page, and then all of a sudden the window goes white and scroll bars are gone. And I've tried saving the page in three browsers, and they all do the same thing. I can see the page come back from what I've downloaded. Then the window goes white. Is that something in their code?
That's their code.
Right. What format are you saving it in? An HTML file?
Yes.
Yeah, so then it goes back to the website to display that page, and if it's like an auction and the page is gone, then you can't see it anymore.
Right, right. So there's some JavaScript likely in the page itself that refreshes it every once in a while so that you keep up to date with the auction. But once
No. It's a completed auction. It's done. It's a static page.
Six of one. It doesn't honestly matter.
Okay.
If it's on one page, it's probably on every page. They don't make different pages for finished auctions. So it's going to check that and something has gone wrong, likely the fact that when you saved it, some browsers will then change the URLs in the page to point specifically to the files on the hard drive. And so now it's looking for a page on the hard drive that doesn't exist because it was never downloaded originally.
So if you save it as a PDF or even a text file, then you'll be able to see that page without them being able to change it.
Well, text file, you won't see the pictures.
True.
So you need to save it as a PDF.
But is that an option when you're saving a web page? I don't remember.
It depends on the browser you're in.
Yeah. Some browsers, one of the choices will be save as PDF.
Any one you can mention offhand? Because I use
my machine has shut down and I cannot.
I use Safari and it calls it a web archive, which is a local copy of the website.
Is that the same as that Internet Explorer single file for both the HTML and the?
Yeah, file. Those will all be HTML too. So no.
But whether it's live HTML or with references locally is the question.
Is there something obvious in the code at the end of that, what I've saved, that I can eliminate?
You'd have to look through probably thousands of lines of code.
Oh, okay.
Many of them, particularly if they're using JavaScript. And it may well be looking for a file that simply you never did download, where the JavaScript goes to look for another JavaScript code that you didn't have.
You can also try printing as PDF if you have a PDF writer installed in your computer. Many times in the print command, you can print and then save as a file, and then it's just a local file and doesn't tie back to the web.
Right.
Funny, I never had any problems with this website before. It's been
people change their websites all the time to add new features and remove old features, and these things happen.
Google Chrome has save as PDF built in.
Okay, Google Chrome.
Yeah.
Safari runs on Windows?
Yes, but they haven't updated it in a while.
Okay. I could try that as a PDF. Okay.
Now, Google Chrome has a PDF. Did it say that Safari has a save as PDF?
Safari does on the Mac. I don't know about Windows.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Jesus. So eventually it's going to be impossible to save a web page.
Well, they are not designed to be saved.
But right? There's so much information that just goes up the chute.
Well, yes. They expect you to come back and look at it again so that they can show you different ads.
Yeah.
They get rid of it.
Sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm.
When information is old and no longer truly useful, they will get rid of it. And there's, you know, unless you can figure out a way to save it, you're kind of done. But as Steve said, many operating systems now allow you to print to PDF.
Okay, right.
So you can say, I want to print this page, which now will get the entire page, of course, and that's nice. And instead of printing to a printer, you print it to PDF.
A file, okay.
Right.
And it looks like Windows 10 has a built-in print to PDF, so you should be able to do that with any browser on Windows 10.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, because I don't remember seeing an option. Usually it's a print, save just HTML, save complete file. And
right. It's
right,
it's
but in this case,
command.
It would be in the print command. So you go to print, it shows you a number of printers, one of which should say PDF printer.
Ah, go to print instead of that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
And conversely, some websites never take off old information.
Right.
And what I hate even more is they don't date the information. So I find an article that's really good, and then they mention something about, you know, new for 2009. What?
Right.
Really?
Right.
And there's no date in the byline at the top.
Right. Or, yeah, I was looking for something the other day, and it said, oh, here's the website. They have all that information. That website was gone. I looked back at the thing. It said 2012.
Yeah.
Mumble, mutter.
Mumble, mumble, mumble.
Yeah, I got to fill that out. We all got to fill that out.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. So when you're opening a browser, and let's say there's more than one tab open, Is the only thing that the computer is actually storing or working on is the address of that site? In other words, why would there be a limit to how many tabs you can have open?
No, all the data that come down for that page are also stored on your computer while that page is open.
Okay, so so you're using up some memory then.
And disk space, because that's the browser cache. It stores all that stuff on the assumption that it can load from hard drive faster than it can download it again.
And
it
in fact, it stores the if you've gone forward a number of pages, it stores the previous pages. That's why you can go back so fast.
Okay, but since the hard drive has a lot of space on it, that's why you can open up quite a large number of tabs at one time.
Right, but any tab that has active information on it, like it's playing music or a video, or 90% of them have active JavaScript or whatever, those stay in memory.
Okay.
That's why your memory fills up.
Okay, so if you're not opening up a page with video or you know something that's active or moving, then presumably you can open up quite a large number of tabs before you're system slows down.
Yes, but there's still going to be a limit.
And you almost never can open a page without video because there's ads playing everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. All right, that explains why if you have, let's say, 12 tabs open, the system is probably going to be slowing down.
Yeah, how much RAM do you have?
8 gigs. Yeah.
And some browsers are better than others. Firefox tends to handle tabs a bit better than Chrome does, although it goes back and forth with each new version.
Right, and Chrome and Firefox both handle it better than Edge.
Yeah. I hear online from people that have 300 tabs open, and my first question is why?
Yeah.
And my second question is how?
Right. Well, you've got 16 gig of RAM and blah, blah, blah.
But the tabs have to be so thin.
The answer to that question is, you know, suppose you're visiting lots of sites. You want to queue them up and be able to go back to them again. But you don't want to write them down or store them someplace in text.
Many websites have a reading list option just for that. You add it to your reading list so you can go back and read it later.
And many of them also have a save all open tabs into a folder.
Yep.
Right.
In your bookmark. So you can say, I've done that more than once where I've got a bunch of tabs open about stuff that I'm interested in, but I can't look at it all now.
Mm-hmm.
So I save it all in a folder, and I give the folder whatever name I need to give it, and I can go back and just say, you know, open all, and boom, they reappear.
Grab some all.
It's the equivalent of putting a little post-it note on, you know, dozens of pages that you want to go back to, essentially.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot.
Yep. All right, have fun. Yep.
You too. Bye.
Yeah, I have several folders in my bookmarks that open 30, 35 tabs at once.
I got usually two browsers open, one in each screen, and they at least have 6 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like you, I've got other folders. I can open up another browser and just say, open all these tabs, and boom, 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 it quick populates them.
Yep.
Because if you get too many, the tabs get so small that you can't actually read what the other tab's for. And it's a waste of time because you're, no, it's not that one. Maybe it's this one next to it. And you,
Right. And you can hover over it and it'll show you what the thing says, but that takes a half a second.
Yeah.
It's much slower than being able to scan across and see what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, and you know, many computer people are more attentive to begin with. So if you group them within folders, then getting to them and dealing with them is a lot easier.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense.
I've almost stopped managing bookmarks. In fact, I've stopped making bookmarks because it's almost easier just to Google it again.
Well, exactly.
Google
right.
is my bookmark manager.
somebody wanted to know. So I was talking to somebody online, and he wanted to know what my user agent was for various reasons, legitimate reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts in, now, the way you find your user agent is you go here, and 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 it'll show you your user agent. By that time, I came back and said, here's my user agent. And by the way, the easiest way to find your user agent is to type into Google, what's my user agent? And it will bring back your user agent.
Yep.
Yep, there it is.
There.
Same as what's my IP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you your IP address. Google knows everything, and it knows that you want to know everything, and it will tell you flipping everything. It's
How did you like did you see the ad for the new one for Google on TV? Yeah, how they're changing their whole policies and changing and to protect your privacy.
No, that's Facebook.
That's
Zuckerberg apologized. Somebody just wrote an article, all of Zuckerberg's apologies back to his first one at Harvard in 2003 when his face mash blew up.
Yep.
And it's exact same language. You know, I'm sorry this happened. I wasn't aware my intent would be misunderstood. And he apologizes, and then a year later, there's some big scandal, he does it again. And that Cambridge Analytica thing again, they technically didn't do anything illegal.
Right.
They followed Facebook's rules, they collected the data, and they did what they were supposed to, what they wanted to, because Facebook allowed that to happen.
Right. And of course,
Cambridge is gone, but Facebook, they just apologize, and everyone keeps using it.
Right, right. And of course, what everybody's sweating is the GDPR,
yep.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And for those of you who are wondering what's in the Windows 10 April 2018 update, well, after some delays, that newest major update has just scraped into April. It became available for download on the 30th and will start distribution on Windows Update on May 8th. So if you haven't got it yet, don't get excited. It's coming. even with its extended, or do get excited because it's coming. Even with its extended development period, a blue screen of death crash was discovered late in the process, forcing Microsoft to delay the release by a few weeks. The new release features feels very similar to its predecessor. While the last couple of updates have tried to push new directions, virtual and augmented reality in the Fall Creators Update, 3D graphics in the Creators Update, with Microsoft trying to promote them as being themed collections of features gathered together, the new update doesn't seem to have any particular overarching theme. Instead, it's a bunch of improvements to various parts of Windows, along with one particularly notable new feature. That big new feature is one we thought we were going to get in the Fall Creators Update, Timeline. Timeline adds a new dimension to the Windows Task Switcher, the one that shows when you press Win Tab or click the Task View button on the taskbar. Specifically, Time, the default view when you first enter the switcher, is the same as it ever was, showing all the windows you have open so that you can instantly pick between them, but now it has a scroll bar. Scroll the screen down and you'll see historic documents, browser tabs, and applications. If Timeline just showed things that you have open on your PC, it would be handy, but it goes further than that. If you use Edge on your Android or iOS phone, tabs open in the mobile browser are also visible in the desktop timeline. Is there anybody who uses Edge on their Android or iOS phone? Anybody on this planet other than someone who works at Microsoft? If the selection of things visible in Timeline is perhaps its weakest. Applications that use Windows standard APIs for most recently used files seem to show their documents within the timeline. Edge tabs all seem to be visible too, but Chrome's tabs don't appear to be tracked in Timeline. The Quiet Hours feature from previous versions have been updated and renamed to Focus Assist. The idea is still the same. At night, you don't want the noise of notifications, so the feature lets you turn them all off at certain times of the day, but now it's considerably more flexible. For example, your laptop can now be specified to hide notifications whenever you're at home, and full-screen DirectX games can also automatically suppress notifications. Beyond these features, Windows 10 continues to feel very transitional. Microsoft is adopting its fluent design in an incremental piecemeal fashion. The settings app has been updated to include translucency and mouse hot tracking effects that Fluent brings, for example. So too does the start menu, but the design is still not being used everywhere, and other elements that Fluent includes, such as the greater use of animations, are still rare. Similarly, transitional is settings. With each Windows update, Microsoft is adding more and more settings to the settings app, eliminating the need for the old control panel. Fonts, for example, are now in the settings app, and fonts can even be installed from the Microsoft Store. So are you looking forward to that update? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. It's an interesting update, actually. Let me talk about transparency for a minute in the Windows. I use XFCE on my Linux desktop. And son of a pup on a stick, it lets you have transparency. So any open window that isn't the focus can be lesser transparency. Right, so it's sort of half visible in the background.
It's faded
out. Which is cute, but when you have three or four windows open and you can't any longer tell which one's on top or how to click into the next one or whatever it is you're doing, and it's a pain in the neck, and I don't particularly care for it. You could also put them transparent when you move them so they look like ghosts moving. And it's all cute eye candy, but it's not actually useful as such.
No.
So I turned all that stuff off again. I was playing with it yesterday, and it annoyed the heck out of me. It annoyed me.
And I just like my old tabs.
Well, and you need to have more RAM and faster processor to use all that eye candy.
Well, I got all that. That's not the problem. The problem is it's not actually useful. It's pretty without being useful.
Yeah, well, like Steve said, though, for some folks...
Like Steve.
But yeah, no, that could be a problem for other folks, though, that maybe, this is cute, and then wonder why their machine's acting up or acting slower.
Right.
Because it is taking more resources.
That goes all the way back to Aero and all the other stuff that Windows did. People would set that stuff up because it's pretty.
Yeah.
And then wonder what the problem was with their machines.
Yeah. Well, all of a sudden now it's slowing down.
If you take all that stuff out, speeds right up again.
Mm-hmm.
Because many graphics cards can't handle the load.
And that's the whole trouble. They can't do that much more with Windows. All they can do is move things around and do this. Windows is Windows is Windows.
Right.
And you can take it from, say, even Windows 7 up to right now. Not much difference.
Well, and Microsoft truly does understand that, and that's why they're going to a subscription model.
Mm-hmm.
Once that happens, they don't have to worry about a lot of that stuff anymore. If you want to use the program, you're going to pay them for it. Yep. And if you stop paying them, your stuff stops working. So they've got you locked in. You are a captive audience.
Yep.
And then they don't have to worry about any of that nonsense anymore. Bless you.
Yes.
And so that's we're seeing that more and more across the industry. People that's one of the reason people love apps, and that's why there is an app store in Windows now as well as in Macs, because once you're in that app store, once you're doing app store things, you're done. You're locked in. If you want to continue to use that thing, you're going to continue to do it their way.
Yep.
And we don't see enough freedom from that stuff. It's one of the reasons I like Ubuntu. On the one hand, you can say, "Well, I'm locked into their repository." Well, that's not true. I can add many repositories to Linux, but equally speaking, I can just change my whole distribution if I want to. So if one of them does something I don't like, oh, say, GNOME, when they went to Unity, I move over to XFCE, and I'm a happy little camper.
Nice.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Milwaukee, New York.
You got it. What's up, buddy?
Oh, the annoyance I have at having to use things in my daily life that have all these animations. Put it this way, the company for which I work has standardized on iPhones. So we're in the Apple universe, presumably for control. It's a health company, so they got HIPAA and all that stuff that they have.
Right.
I find myself waiting for animations to stop, to try and tap the next thing. Like, okay, I want to delete some SMSs that, you know, an automated system, hey, something's wrong. And I'm literally waiting for things to slide up from the bottom of the screen or to slide sideways because, oh, I just deleted that message and I'm waiting so I can tap the next darn button on the screen.
Yep.
It's just...
Well, operating systems like that, particularly Apple, are not designed for power users, and they never have been. If you could turn all those animations off, maybe. But the fact is, while Macintosh does amazing things, and iOS does amazing things, if you have to continually wait for all that stuff, you're not, you know, and you don't mind waiting for that stuff, you're not a power user.
There is a feature to turn off or reduce motion effects in settings, general accessibility, and that may do some of what you're looking for.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out. golly, and people don't think the processor, some processor in there, whether it's the GPU or the main CPU, has to move those pixels around.
Yep.
It has to waste electricity doing that.
Yep.
So you get less battery life with all this eye candy.
That's exactly right.
As you pointed out, useless eye candy.
Yep. If you can reduce that, you may actually increase the battery life on your phone.
Yeah. And I'll add this much too. I'm an XFCE fan as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can reduce these effects to the point of to drag windows around to reposition them. You can drag just wireframes.
Yes.
I forget what option it is, but you can turn on just wireframes, and you get a double line that you're dragging around the screen, and the big advantage there is you can see the stuff under it that you're dragging over. So you can, position your windows very precisely.
Yep, exactly right. So you can do a lot of things that are useful. Again, I turned all that off on my laptop, because I don't want to waste battery making that stuff happen. That's ridiculous. But leaving it on your desktop certainly would make a certain amount of sense. I also got, like I said, I just got, when you have five or six windows stacked up and you can see them all through each other, which one's at the top?
Well, unfortunately, it's like, you know, Tim's way or the highway, or Steve's way or the highway, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the truth. Listen, we got to go. Thanks. Thanks,
sure,
Joe.
Thank you.
Have
bye.
A great week. We're done. We're done. That music tells me that we are finished for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank all of you who called up. I'm Nick Francesco, and you've spent 2 hours of your life listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you because we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.